like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
When I move, you move.
Just like that.
Hell yeah, hey DJ, bring that back.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Box. We are into the bye rounds, and that means we have a lot of fantasy football for AFL Dream Team and Herald Sun and every other News Limited publication, Supercoach, to talk about. My name is Monty, and the next voice you're going to hear is Molly. We are Hawthorn supporters, so strangely with this week we have no Hawk talk, although I'm sure we'll find some reason to talk about Hawthorn players, Molly.
I'm sure we will.
Yes.
And
well,
why
we
want to.
Well, of course, in every week's show, we do try to talk about at least one player from every team. That's a rule that I've set myself, and we've been going 185 episodes doing the same thing. So we are going to be talking about players who are coming off the bye, but that'll be after the round review. And I suppose we talked a bit about the byes and how they all felt last week, but. How did you see the week panning out, given that par was, you know, 1800 this week instead of the 2150 or 2200 that it was normally? Do you think the game felt any different with everyone, you know, effectively eating four donuts?
Well, I mean, of course it did, but I mean, there's not much we can do in the game to stop that as such. I mean, apart from what is being done already. So. I think that the methods that both the competitions took were good measures, and you know they played out the way they did, and I think both of them had some positive and negatives amongst them.
I do wonder whether Dream Team will adopt the three trade policy of Supercoach, because that did obviously offer a whole lot more in terms of options. And as I've always said, options are, you know, maximising the amount of options that people have maximises the enjoyment they get out of the game. So without obviously ruining the balance of the game, it does seem like that three trades a week does seem to have given Supercoach a bit more flexibility, I suppose. And that's interesting to see what will happen next year. Look, I mean, anything could happen next year. There's, I mean, without getting into too much industry stuff, I believe that obviously, the fact that the registrations have gone down this year is going to mean a fair bit of, or could mean a fair bit of change. A lot of water to go under the bridge before that happens, of course. But I mean, with the rise of ultimate footy and, of course, of stadium fantasy sports, the landscape in the fantasy industry is a lot more diverse these days, and that means that the people who run AFL Dream Team and Herald Sun Supercoach have to reevaluate what they expect out of these competitions and where the directions they're going to go. So, I mean, I think the direction they've gone this year has been a good one, but it's just a matter of whether they can get those registrations back up to the, in Dream Team's case, I think it was 300,000 they used to be getting, and Herald Sun was up above 400,000, and they're well down on that this year. So there is still a lot of talk to be done in the second half of this year about what that means for the industry in the long term. But I'm sure that'll come out in the press when it all happens. I don't believe it's been started yet, but I'm sure it'll happen soon. But anyway, we'll get on to the round review, Molly, and that does start with the Essendon and Carlton game on the Friday night, which apparently, if you believe Essendon and Carlton fans, is the second biggest rivalry in football, which I'm not quite sure is all that true, but I'm sure they believe it. But nevertheless, we are going to be talking a fair bit this week, Molly, about premiums who have buys which are not in round 11, who you might actually be sideways trading this week. And I suppose we'll start with a couple of those on the Essendon side, Joe Watson and Brent Stanton, both of whom have been up and down. They've not had all that great years in terms of consistency. They do tend to go missing sometimes. They either, in Stanton's case, he got injured and had a bit of a blip. And Watson, he does tend to go missing sometimes in some games. And they both tend to get tagged out of games, and they certainly, well, Stanton certainly was in this game, and Watson wasn't all that much better. So, if you, I mean, this is going to be a question I'm going to be asking at least half a dozen times tonight to you, Molly. If you have Stanton or Watson, Are these guys the ones you would sacrifice if you have too many round 13 midfielders? Are these the ones you'd trade out, or would you keep them?
I think I've been on record as saying that Stanton is someone who I figured to have for the early part of the season, because he starts off very well and then look to get rid of for the second half of the season, where he tends to struggle. So I actually did it a lot earlier than I thought I would, because of the injury to Stanton a little bit earlier in the season. So I think Stanton is one I would be looking to move on if I still had him. I think as far as Watson goes, though, I think he's okay. And he would be one I would be looking to hold on to if I had him in my side.
Well, I mean, I think Stanton is a player who is always going to have high standard deviation, to use a statistical term. But yeah, Watson is certainly one who you would think would be more reliable. But again, as I said, he does tend to get tagged out of games too. So, I mean, if you believe the form line from last year, this is about the time when Essendon's season all falls apart. So, I mean, if you want to load up on... I mean, it is possible to look at the draws of other teams, and I'm sure we'll get to that when we get to the round 11 bye teams. There's one in particular who you'd want to load up on in the second half of the season due to their draw. But yeah, that's certainly, if you believe in the Essendon second half fade out as happened last year, then obviously those two are ones to get off. On the other side of that game, Molly, a good news story before we look at a few more who might be sideways trade targets. Of course, Essendon and Carlton are both round 13 bye players and teams, and due to the preponderance of especially midfield premiums in those round 13 bye teams, especially the premium midfielders in these teams will be looked at being traded out. But before we get to those players, Jared Waite. We are going to be talking a little bit later about the top six backs, but and I think we'll leave the top six forwards for a couple of weeks. But Jared Waite on current form, Molly. I mean, he kicked pretty much all of Carlton's score in that game, and he doesn't seem to have much in the way of opposition for targets from the likes of Casbolt or Warnock when he's in there, or Cruiser. They don't seem to kick to him much. Robinson doesn't command the ball as a lead-up target. They don't seem to pass much to Garlett on a lead. Betts has had a pretty poor season, had another poor game in that one. So it's pretty much Waite or bust for that Carlton mid forward line. Thus, Waite, you know, he's not going to score 8 goals every week, but some of these scores he's pumping out in these games does tend to suggest that the rating of him as elite by the champion data ranking system is fairly well justified. I mean, he is an elite player, and it's just a matter of if you're going to bring him in the second half of the season, whether you believe he can actually pump out 11 games in a row, which historically he's struggled to do.
Yeah, and that is the worry, is his fitness, which has been nothing less than shocking throughout his career. You know, 15 games is the most he's played in the last, 5 years, 4 years before this year. So he's really struggled to string games together. He's lost the plot and got suspended as well. So, you know, that's the big worry for me, is how reliable is he as a player? Is he going to be there each week when you need him?
Well, I mean, I've got him in Ultimate Footy, and I've been enjoying his scores in that competition. But yes, for Dream Team, he does have a history of not playing full seasons. But of course, if you manage to luck on to that one season where he does make it all click, then, you know, a bit like, who's the other player I'm thinking of? Big Hairy Cat. He was one of those.
Cameron Mooney.
He was very much that sort of player, injury and suspension. He was very much a risk on both of those scores, but he managed to, you know, bring it all together 1 year, and he was a very good fantasy player that year. So if you think Waite can do what Mooney did, then, you know, that he's a valid I mean, he's probably fully priced at the moment. I believe he's priced in the mid-90s already, so I mean, that's probably what he's going to be averaging. So you're not buying low, but if you think he's going to be in the top six forwards, then you probably get value for money. Now, the midfielders who I think are probably going to be in the gun. Certainly they are in my teams, Molly. Mark Murphy, he's probably the one who's disappointed me most as a premium midfielder. I thought he was at least 5 points undervalued at the start of the year because, of course, he had an injury interrupted 2012. But he has succumbed to the same sort of malaise that a lot of inside midfielders have this year, as I talked about last year, because of the lack of clearances, and the lack of stoppages to get clearances at. Players like Murphy, who are inside and are too slow to get enough out on the spread to get those cheap marks and kicks, players like him have suffered, and he also, of course, has suffered under tags at times this year. So is Murphy one who, I mean, if you've got the likes of Swan, Pendlebury, you might have Watson or Stanton, you've got a bunch of these round 13 midfielders. Is Murphy one of the ones who you've got in the gun to trade out as early as this week?
Yeah, he could very well be someone who you look to trade out this week. As you've quite rightly said, his performances haven't been up to scratch. And as someone who pulled him in hoping that he was going to turn it around, he just hasn't yet. So he's definitely one that the new style of footy is affecting, and therefore, I think he's still an opportunity to turn it around if you don't have him. But if you have him, then you're I would say after the bye if you don't have him. But if you've got him, then yeah, he's definitely one of the ones in the gun to sideways trade to try and get a better midfield player at this point in the season.
Yep, a couple more from Carlton. A player who a lot of teams would have been looking at to trade out in this bye period would have been Kane Lucas. He's done his job. He's earned a bunch of money. He hasn't always been entirely startable, but he's, as I said, he's accumulated a bunch of cash in both competitions, 125 in Dream Team and 165 in Supercoach. His price has gone up. Break even of around about 60, 65 in both competitions. I guess the question this week, Molly, is not necessarily whether you will trade him out, because structurally you have to trade him out, if not this week, then next week. But he's got Hawthorn this week, and it has been shown that Lucas does struggle when Carlton aren't winning the inside ball. And I guess the question is, do you think that he's going to be starved of supply against Hawthorn, and thus you'd want to trade him out this week rather than next week?
Yeah, that's definitely something to consider. And as we said, it's most likely that you're going to have an abundance of round 13 players. I was looking at my side earlier, and by putting most of my round 12 players on the bench, I still had almost enough players to play this week. So I think that a lot of people will be in that situation, and so it's time to start looking to see what side trades or maybe slight upgrade trades there are to round 11 players.
Mm. All right, and the other blue I wanted to talk about was Mitch Robinson. Now, he hasn't actually been all that bad leading into round 11, but he delivered a 40 and was subbed off in that game. Prior to that, he'd had five games in a row of 80 or more, including three 90s. He hasn't actually pulled up a DT ton all year, but he's been solid. Just puts in a bad game every now and again. Obviously, the first game against Richmond it was also a bit of a shocker, but if you have, a number of people would have more than two round 13 bye players, and while they might be looking in their midfield and thinking, "Boy, I have way too many round 13 bye players in my midfield," it might actually be better to trade out a bloke like Robinson. There are options in the forward line. We'll go through those options later on, but just at this point, with Robinson's price, his break-even's going to be astronomical this week. Is Robinson too unreliable? I mean, he has had a good run, but is he too unreliable and thus won't get near the top six forwards?
Yeah, he's probably not going to go on without a DT ton this year. He's probably unlikely to go on and make the top six forwards type or top eight forwards type list. So, yeah, I think there is some merit in looking at him as one of the guys to trade out before the bye. He's got a pretty tricky run out of the bye with Collingwood and Sydney. But yeah, I think it's probably, you know, worth trading him out.
All right, on to the GWS Geelong game. Again, talking about the GWS team, very hard to talk about anyone other than Lachie Whitfield. And this is going to be a very easy question for you, Molly. This week, Whitfield, I know he's got a round 13 bye. He does have a break even of around about, 72 in Dream Team and 94 in Supercoach. He's for the chop this week, isn't he?
Yes, I would have thought he would be another one that if you're trying to get under the round 13 bye problem that you're looking to move on.
Yep, and on the Geelong side, actually wanted to do a bit of a comparison. I've copped a bit of flack on Twitter this week for recommending a player from the next game, from the Adelaide-Sydney game, Luke Brown, and certainly the difference between if you had Jackson Thurlow in your backline versus Luke Brown this week, you've got a donut out of Luke Brown, but you've got a massive 81 in Dream Team and 72 in Supercoach. Now, I'd actually recommended getting in either of these players at the time, so it's just a matter of timing whether you got Luke Brown in and you still had him in your side leading into the bye period. And Thurlow, I mean, some people might have got lucky. They might have, you know, figured out he was going to be, especially given that he was playing GWS this week, that might have been a good call to get him in because of the opposition that Geelong were facing this week. But is that luck, or was I wrong in making that call on Luke Brown? That, you know, he was actually dropped. I don't believe he was injured in that, or at least the injury was not all that serious. So they've brought in Laird, and I think it was of course they had Van Berlo playing off the back line in this game. So I guess the question I'm asking is, was I wrong to advise people about Luke Brown, or was it just luck that he wasn't playing this week and Jackson Thurlow was and did so much better?
Oh, I think there's a fair amount of luck in it. I think Brown looked good, and I think he got a niggle early on, didn't he, in the first few rounds. So that sort of slowed him down a little bit. But yeah, I think he was a fine, you know, okay pickup. And the Thurlow's just had a good run, and he's chancing. Since he had Thurlow, and you know, so maybe one more week and then get him out for the bye round as well.
All right. The internet's a bit crappy tonight, so we're missing a few little bits here and there from you, Molly. But hopefully it'll hold out until the end of the show.
My fingers are crossed.
Indeed. So. While we're talking about that Adelaide game, this is another player who has a round 13 bye. Adelaide, of course, is on the bye in round 13. Those who bought Patrick Dangerfield hoping he would get to the next level this year probably would have been a bit disappointed, especially from a Dream Team perspective. His scoring has gone down in both competitions, 3.5 in Dream Team and 8 points in Supercoach, because he's had a fairly high standard deviation. He's had two scores of 140+. And a bunch of scores, three scores below 80. So he is very much a boom-bust type player. Is he one who you can trust in the second half of the year to improve? Because I'm looking at his draw. It's Gold Coast, Eagles, Pies, Cats, Freo. That's pretty hard across the first month or so. And then leading into the last quarter, Port, North, Dogs, Melbourne, Eagles. So that's actually a bit better. But maybe that run of the next five or so games means you might want to get him out just for the short-term money.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of merit in that, although he's someone who does thrive from the contest. So there may be an argument to say that he'll be able to survive and roll through that sort of experience and come out the side, you know, it's still looking okay.
Now, I am one who has brought Sam Kerridge into the bye rounds. Now, of course, he has had two excellent scores this year with his 118 in the GWS game, and of course that game where he kicked 6 goals in the second half against North. But other than that, he's had some pretty poor scores, especially in Supercoach, where I've actually got him. He's one of those players who often scores a lot less in Supercoach than he does in Dream Team, which is a source of annoyance to me. But I guess the question is, if you've got Kerridge and you might be hoping that he'd be actually to be able to deliver one of those better scores, that wasn't so much the case in that game against Sydney. He was one of the many Crows who had a very poor week. Is he for the chop this week? I know Adelaide are playing this week and they have got Richmond. So what do you think Kerridge is going to be scoring this week? Is he going to pull out another 30 like he has in four of the... how many is that he's played so far? Four of the eight games he's scored less than 40. So is it going to be one of those or is it going to be one of the big numbers and thus should I get rid of him this week?
It is a bit of a lotto, so I would be looking to take the money and run. You know, if you picked him up early, you've got a good price rise out of him. He's got that buy coming up. So I think there's a merit in looking to move him on now and take that value before he comes up against that 117-point break even.
Now, on the Sydney side of that game, Molly, I don't know if you're one of the people who is in the habit of getting players before they hit the bubble. I was actually one of those who, in Supercoach, who was able to get on to Tom Mitchell this week, and I was very much happy with his performance, as all of those who brought him in this week would have been. Now, he is actually second all-time in his break-even. I tweeted that this week about how Michael Barlow still holds the record because he scored 255 Dream Team in his premium points in his first two games and had a break-even of minus 189, I believe it was. And Mitchell's not quite that low. He's met 173, I believe, minus 173 in his Dream Team break-even, because, of course, he... but it was pointed out to me that Mitchell has managed to do that in only 6.5 quarters, because, of course, he came on in the second quarter of his first game. And, of course, he has a few Dream Team records as of now, Molly. Of course, he did earn the cape in his first full quarter of senior footy, which Barlow did not manage to do. And I think, was it last year, Magna was pretty close. He got about 47 in his first quarter of senior footy. So I think it was 53 that Mitchell got in his first quarter of senior footy. And yeah, 144 in his second game. I believe that's the highest second game score of anyone. And those tackle scores in the double figures certainly helped that. So that's a bit of a a tick for those who, you know, want to take a chance on a guy. I mean, you look at that first game and you think, well, his points per minute are better than most people in the comp. And I know it was, you know, the opposition might not have been all that much chop, but he's done it again this week. So obviously everyone's going to be bringing him in after the bye if they haven't already. But I suppose I haven't really got a question, Molly. I just wanted to roll out those stats and just celebrate what a great Dream Team player he is.
Yeah, there's not much you can say about him. He's been wrapped up in the media a lot coming into his first game, and he's lived up to all expectations. So if you haven't got him, you're going to have to burn a trade to get him in, because he's just too good to be true.
And, I mean, it's also... I mean, this is obviously something that couldn't have been planned for, but those... Dream Teamers or Supercoach coaches who had already brought in eight premium midfielders, what do they do now? I mean, how can you not play Tom Mitchell on that form? I mean, it's a bit of an argument for not wanting to lock down every single position by round 11, because how can you not play Mitchell?
Yeah, no, I mean, he has to continue to hold his spot for a while. At some point, he'll be given a rest, but... unless something changes that we can't see right now, he's gonna be in the side for a long time.
And it has been pointed out to me, who would have thought even a couple of years ago that Sydney would produce so many premium Dream Teamers? I mean, Malcheski's there about. We'll get to the premium backs. He's in that conversation. O'Keefe, obviously. Hanbury's been very good this year. Jack has been excellent. He's been one of the best. He's right up there and competing for top eight honours. And now Mitchell and Goods has had his moments. Kennedy hasn't been so great. But, I mean, there's been... You could probably get three or four into the top 22 of Dream Team in the end of, at the end of the year, which is going to be amazing. But yeah, that's something which you wouldn't have expected from the Paul Roos coached Swans, but certainly the way that they're playing under Horace Longmire, that's the slingshot works for them for Dream Team purposes. So anyway, we'll move on. Well, actually, before we get to the Gold Coast North Melbourne game, there were a couple of players that wanted to mention. Of course, Sydney being on a round 12 bye, so you probably wouldn't be getting these guys in this week. But Jesse White is going to be on the bubble next week, Molly, with an average of 74 and a break even of minus 10. Now, he is priced at 214 in Dream Team and thereabouts in Supercoach, so he's not bargain basement by any stretch of the imagination. But, I mean, White is obviously fighting for his life, and they're going to bring Tippett in after the bye. Do you see him playing at all? Do you see him actually being part of that 21 or 22 in the second half of the season?
No, I can't see that continuing long-term with Tippett coming and Reed and even later in the season LRT to return as well. I think that, you know, he hasn't got long in the side and it's just a matter of time till he'll be dropped.
Mm. So what does that mean for Adam Goods? Now, he is a player who I would... A lot of coaches, myself included, have hoped that he would come good in the second half of the year, as he often does. But he has been very poor since his the King Kong episode, and he is dragging down a lot of fantasy teams. Molly, he has produced the game against Essendon wasn't too bad, but 46 and 39 in that game against Adelaide, where they absolutely dominated. I mean, you look at Sydney's draw, and it really opens up, especially in the first half after the first month after the bye. Port, Carlton, Melbourne, GWS. That's a pretty good draw in the first month afterwards. So, I mean, I'm assuming that people are going to be bringing in a lot of Sydney Sydney players after the round 12 bye. Is Goods still one of them, or does that game on the weekend make you think that, well, this is actually not a good idea to bring Goods in for the second half of the season?
It's going to be a tricky one. I think he definitely has the ability. He's shown it this season, the ability that he still can play and could push hard to get to the, you know, from now on to the top 10 of the sports category. So I think he's one who you might take a risk on. But, you know, you got to know what you're getting and that maybe later in the season he may even be rested at some point.
I do look at the last month, of course, which is when fantasy finals are on. So if you're aiming at a league victory, Collingwood in round 20, Geelong in round 22, and then Hawthorn in round 23. So if you're still playing finals by then, those are some pretty tough opponents. But, I mean, this is Adam Goods. He does tend to play well against the better opponents. He got 117 against the Hawks. And he got 147 against the Pies, so maybe that's actually a good thing that he's playing the better teams, because he does tend to go missing, I suppose, when he's not needed. So, yeah. I mean, he only got a 40 in the Gold Coast game, so maybe it's just that when he's not needed, he doesn't put the hard yards in. But anyway, we'll move on to the Gold Coast and North Melbourne game. Very entertaining game, I thought, from a football purist point of view, watching... Now, which Scott is it? Is Chris Scott or Brad Scott? Brad Scott, the one who is at North, isn't it? Yeah, always forget right. That one. Brad Scott. So he was comprehensively out-coached after the first quarter by Guy McKenna. And they allowed Trent McKenzie, it was, to be the Lucy in defence. We'll get to him when we talk about the top six backs, as he's a contender there, surprisingly. But... I was going to talk about Josh Kennedy there before about the Swans. Well, I suppose we've talked about him a few weeks ago anyway, so we'll leave that one for another day. Of course, the player that is on a lot of fantasy coaches' lips this week from the Gold Coast, Molly, is Tom Nicholls. He has put in another excellent performance certainly in the numbers, 113 in Dream Team and 139 in Supercoach, and he's on the bubble this week, of course, remembering that Gold Coast also has a round 13 bye. So, I mean, I'm even considering bringing Blickavs into my midfield and actually putting Nicholls into my backs because into my rucks, I should say. So, I mean, those numbers are just so good that it's almost worth taking that risk and burning one of those trades, especially in Dream Team where they're so cheap. It probably doesn't really suit the structure of a lot of teams coming into the buy period, and so a lot of teams are going to be ignoring him. But are these numbers just too good to give up?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there is some logic in bringing him in for that reason. So he's got a game this week. You may have, you may have two round 12 rucks, so you need another player on your bench. I guess a few people, me included, still have Daniel Curry there.
Mm.
So that's an option as well to get Curry out and bring him in. And, so I think, I wouldn't be expecting too much from him. But with that sort of break-even price and the fact that he is a warm body this week, there is some logic to bringing him in and hoping the best.
It's just that, I mean, there are so few other players on the bubble this week, and he's the obvious one if you're bringing someone in who want to play also this week. So, and of course, his buy doesn't really matter as much. I think this is more of a Supercoach thing because you've got that third trade. You can afford to spend it on Nichols, I feel, in Supercoach, whereas in Dream Team, you're probably concentrating more on your round 13 mids and getting those out for round 11 mids. So I feel that's the... the only other way I could see that is if you want to... Like if you've got, say, a Whitfield and an O'Meara, for instance, and you might already have Frovat, for instance, and so you're looking for a round 11 downgrade, and you don't find one. So what you do is you put Blickabs into the midfield, and bring Nichols in the back line, and then you upgrade in the ruck section, I should say, and then upgrade in the midfield. So I could see that as being a Dream Team focused trade, but yeah. So I think mostly it's going to be in Supercoach where he is brought in. But so I mean, where do you see Nichols in terms of his job security, Molly? So obviously with Zach Smith injured, and Dixon has only just come back into the team. He looked pretty lucky; he could do with a run, and of course he got injured again on the weekend. So it does look like Nichols, just for the short term, has pretty high job security. But it's just a matter of how long Smith is out for, I guess, isn't it?
There's a lot of that involved. That's definitely something to consider. But I think he's going to hold that spot. He's shown a lot. It's not just that his scores have been high. He has shown that he can do the job for the team.
Yeah. I mean, Greenju played last week is evidently not a threat either. So they'd prefer to have Dixon in ruck support and a bit of maybe Sam Day as well, or maybe a bit of Tom Lynch as well. So that, I think they've got enough second ruckmen there. So... they're evidently not going to play Nichols and Grinch because that's just going too tall. They're probably too tall as it is. But, that's an interesting one for those who have the luxury to bring him in, I suppose. Now, I'll just mention in passing, we've already glossed over one player who's on the bubble this week, Will Hams from Essendon, who's averaged 10, so he wasn't even worth really mentioning. But another player who is on the bubble this week is Tim Sumner, a lanky key forward for the Gold Coast. I think they're just putting games into him at this point, Molly. I can't see him. I mean, he's a tall forward, so you're probably not going to bring him anyway. He's got a break even of minus 19 on an average of 42.5. That doesn't really cut it, I don't think. So, I mean, and again, around 13 buy, so that's pretty difficult to bring in at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, that's all true. So, yeah, he's going to be a tough one to pick up. So,
yep.
I would look elsewhere.
On the North Melbourne side of that game, Molly, I was pretty strident a week or two ago about the decision whether you get Andrew Swallow or Joel Selwood. And I was on the Swallow bandwagon, and... I may have a bit of a thought to backtrack and run away from that bandwagon a little bit, Molly, because Swallow was nowhere in that first half and had a pretty poor game. He had got some junk time stuff, but in a game where I think the The received wisdom would have been in a greasy game, a wet game, an inside game where there are a lot of stoppages. Theoretically, you would have expected Andrew Swallow to have a pretty good game, but he was anonymous, especially for that first half. He was even when North were going well, he wasn't actually scoring all that well. So I'm a bit worried about Swallow. And again, if you might have a few more round 12 by players, and you might be looking to get rid of it. You know, you might have someone like Johnson in your midfield. You might have a couple of those Swans players. You might have Kennedy. You might have Jack. You might have O'Keefe, I suppose. There's a bunch of those round 12 midfielders. But is Swallow a player who you would consider trading out, or do you think he is a keeper for the second half of the season?
I'd consider trading him out, absolutely. Because, you know, as I say, he's had a struggle this season, although perhaps that's an argument to say that he's about to turn it around. The side's sort of been walloped in the media, and so, you know, they've got a reasonable run out of the bye period, but a terrible, but a fairly hard run in the DT finals and leading into the DT finals. So,
good point.
Yeah, I mean, I would consider trading him out if that made sense to you. If you had the trade to spend.
Yeah, the thought at the start of the season was that he had another level to go, and that might be true, but his numbers are down a couple of points in both competitions. And again, he might be another one of those inside players who doesn't spread enough because he is a bit slow compared to a lot of the other midfielders. And he might, you know, his scoring might be 5 or 10 points down just for that reason. And the fact that he's only 2 points down from last year might indicate that he has, you know, taken a bit of a next step. But he just doesn't. His game is not suited to the way the rules are at the moment with the lack of stoppages. But again, so many stoppages. I mean, Goldstein had a record like 59 hitouts in that game. There were just a massive amount of stoppages and a massive amount of hitouts by Goldstein. But Swallow was on very few of them, the end of very few of them. So that was a bad sign for mine. Anyway, we'll move on to the St Kilda and West Coast game, and another couple of premiums who have done fairly well in the first half of the season, Molly, in Lee Montagna and Nick Riewoldt. They have improved their numbers significantly from last season. Montagna is up, 9 points in both competitions, and I think Riewoldt's around about the same. But these are old players, Molly. These are players who, Riewoldt especially has had a long injury history, and he has surprised everyone except those who were putting faith in him in the start of the season. Those hardy souls, those champions. But I mean, St Kilda's draw does not get any easier, because apart from the fact that they don't play them themselves, so that's one win denied to them. But they have Melbourne, I suppose, this week. But I mean, after that, they got Port in round 17, Brisbane in round 19, and Gold Coast in round 23. Apart from that, they're going to get flogged every week, I think, Molly. So Montagna has managed to score fairly consistently, despite the Saints getting flogged every week, and Riewoldt the same. But do you take the money and run now? Because again, St Kilda, a round 13 by team. If you have too many round 13 players, these guys look like they might be in the gun, even though they've outperformed themselves in the first half of the year.
Yeah, and that's the trouble with it. And maybe with someone like a Riewoldt, the question might be asked whether he's going to run out of steam, although, you know, the word is that he's looked in the best condition he has for a long time, but, you know, he's one injury away from being done.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of he's been very consistent and as far as his worst performances being 80, but a lot of his price is off the back of a few big games. Mm. So, you know, it depends on whether you want to ride that out for the rest of the season and hope he can do it again. I mean, I guess the good news is, you know, you might look at their draw and say they've still got Hawthorne and Sydney and Geelong to go, but he scored his best score against Sydney. So, you know, is that an issue or, you know, an opportunity for him to shine again?
Hmm. It's a dilemma. I mean, those coaches who have them would be very happy with their performance, and it's an emotional thing, I think, at this point, because they've been unique picks, and they've really come on, and they've really, you know, if you're high in the rankings and you've got either Montaigne or Riewoldt, those guys are part of, I mean, a big reason why you're so high in the rankings. So it's a bit hard to you know, cut your or you know, slit their throat when they're going well. You know, you don't really want that sort of red wedding, Molly, in your own dream team. But the St Kilda Starks, really. You don't want to be the phrase and backstab them. But oh well, sometimes it needs to be done for the good of the realm, Molly. And
someone's been watching Game of Thrones, have we?
Yeah, oh, possibly, yes. so on the West Coast side of that game, Molly, another couple of old stages who might also have their something of theirs cut, at least they're placed on it on fantasy teams cut, if not their throats. Matt Prittis and Dean Cox. Now, Prittis would have been picked up by a lot of coaches after his concussion game, where he scored a barely any points at all, and of course his price was depressed after that. He has been okay since then, but I don't think he's going to be in the top eight midfielders. His scoring in that game was looking like it was going to be a poor one, but of course he almost put on the Superman cape in the last quarter, two big goals to help the Eagles over the line. And I suppose a separate question is Dean Cox. While I think Prittis is someone who I could see a lot of coaches trading out if they're overloaded with round 12 bye players, I think the thinking would be different on Dean Cox, because while, again, he's like, you know, Riewoldt and Montaigne, he's an old stager, I feel like I have a lot more faith in Dean Cox, and his death has been greatly exaggerated many, many times. Although, I mean, admittedly, the same thing I said about Riewoldt and Montaigne, about the emotional attachment, I, like many fantasy coaches, have taken great pleasure in Dean Cox scoring many, many big points for my fantasy team over many, many years. So am I being too emotional with Cox and not classing him with Prittis as someone who is expendable?
I guess you could, but yeah, Prittis has always been an interesting one. He's never really gone on with it and gone to the premium with, you know, he had that one season in 2011 where he got up to 105, but he's been just that in and under player that just hasn't sort of, you know, in dream team anyway, gone on with it. You know, in Supercoach he's had some good years, but yeah, no, dream team he's just never really been that player. Now, whether he can go on for the second half of the year and so, you know, looking at the overall his overall score for the year may be misleading, that, you know, this is the bad half of his year and the good half of his year is still to come. But my gut feel is to say that I've had him once before, and he was disappointing week to week. That you know, he just never seemed to go on with it the way that, you know, the Swans and Ablets, you know, at the top level, but even the, you know, the Montanas when they were at their best and the likes, going with the Boyds and so forth.
So, but what about with Cox? I mean, am I being too emotional with Cox, or do you think, you know, having faith in him is going to be justified?
Yeah, I mean it's a sort of a harder decision with Cox because he's in the ruck, and although he might not be smashing it the way we used to like with him, his scores are still very adequate and at the top end of the ruck scores. So, yeah, we'd like him to be scoring a bit more, but he's really not that badly positioned.
I feel like this has happened for a couple, 2 or 3 years straight, Molly, where Cox has been maligned, and you know his scoring has either gone down or stayed level, but he is going to be in the top two scorers, and I think this year might be his last year, because Nat Newey might go past him, and that 50-50 split might go much further Nat Newey's way next year. But I think just for this year, Cox is still a warrior, and he's still going to score your points. I guess that is the real question, isn't it, Molly? There is going to be a point where Nat Newey is going to go way past Cox, and instead of it being 50-50, it'll be 70-30, and then Cox is going to turn into a pumpkin. But I don't feel like the second half of this year is going to be that point. It might be next year, but not this year.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot to be said with that point of view.
All right, and on the Melbourne, the Queen's Birthday Massacre is what I was trying to say, Molly, on the Monday, of course. Now, Jimmy Tumpus, I was critical, or at least I was recommended not getting him at the start of the season, I believe, and that certainly has turned out to be one of my rare good calls. But I actually think he's might be worth getting in after his bye, Molly, because he has gone down in both competitions, 31 grand in Dream Team and 48 in Supercoach. So he's almost down to rookie price, of course, having been given a price premium for being the number two draft pick. But it was number three draft pick, I believe. But his break even this week is below 20 after his 50 odd in both competitions. And you look at the Melbourne draw coming up. I mean, I think this week was the first week where I thought, right, Tumpus is actually showing us what he was drafted in the top three for. And he's obviously got the body to do it, but for whatever reason, it just didn't come for him in the first three or four games that he played. But I feel like he might have gone back to the VFL and actually found out about things, and he looked like more of an AFL player. I mean, that sort of 50-odd is nothing to write home about, but if you're struggling for... I mean, you might already have Mitchell and Hrovat by the time next week comes around, and so you'd be looking for someone in the midfield to go downgrade to, and Tumpus might be that option because he's priced, as I said, less than 140 in both competitions. But and you look at his draw, St Kilda and the Dogs, which is a pretty good draw in the next couple of weeks. I mean, you might only be holding him for those 2 weeks. After that, it gets more difficult with the Swans and the Cats. But, I mean, Melbourne's second half draw is actually reasonably good. They've still got the GWS and Gold Coast and the Dogs again. So Dogs twice in that second half of the year, including North and Adelaide. So I believe that's only, what's that, one, two, three teams who are in the eight in the second half of the year for Melbourne. So I actually like Tumpus as if you're in the position to do that. If you're like me, you've gone a bit early on the likes of Hrovat and Mitchell. Tumpus might actually be an option if you're downgrading after next week, Molly.
Yeah, well, I mean, that is an interesting way to look at it. And the fact that, as you say, his price has dropped and quite substantially. He is now, you look at him now as a rookie, and 17-11 break even is very doable, and if he can turn it around, then you've got a good player. So I think he is someone we all should look at next week to see what it looks like to bring him in, especially if you're looking to get a rookie out and upgrade somebody else.
All right, on the Collingwood side of that game, now, of course, those who had the likes of Swan and Pendlebury and Cloak and Shaw and McCaffer all were greeted by big tons, so good luck to those guys. And, of course, I'm not presuming anyone's going to be trading out those guys anytime soon. But I guess the question for me, Molly, is I brought in Luke Ball, as I presume a lot of coaches did, for a short time, for a good time, not a long time. But Ball has been fairly productive. He's had, after his initial 70-odd in 72-64 against the Cats, he's turned out three consecutive tons. Now, two of those have come against lesser sides, and I presume he'll probably be scoring again the same week, again this week against the Dogs. But would you be trading him out after the round 12 game, or is he going to be scoring those hundreds, through the rest of the season, and thus he'd actually be worth holding on to more than, a couple of those other players who, we've gone through already, is it worth holding on to him after the bye, even if it maybe might mean you eat a donut in the bye period?
Right. Well, I mean, he could be. He has scored very well. His break even's still low. He's knocking out hundreds. They've got the Bulldogs this week, so that's probably going to be another good score, you'd think. Got the Port Adelaide on the other side of the bye, still got Gold Coast and GWS. But then the finals run is Sydney, is Essendon into the final, and then Sydney, Hawthorn, West Coast and North Melbourne. But I guess the other thing to think of with that is that in Dream Team anyway, you know, it you could always trade him out before that period then, because you're going to have the two trades to trade anyway. So, yeah, you know, it's not a huge problem if you don't trade him out during the bye rounds and you carry him on the bench.
I guess the other possibility is that you trade him out after round 12 and then get him back in after round 13. I mean, if you think he's that good, then you might just get someone in who doesn't have a round 13 bye just for that week. This is in Dream Team, obviously. You wouldn't probably do that in Supercoach, because that'd be silly because you've got limited trades. But in Dream Team, that's actually a valid point, isn't it?
Sorry, can you say that again?
So if you're getting in someone, like if you want to get in a Boyd for a week because you think he's got a good round 13 opponent, and then you think he's not going to be as good for the rest of the year. So then you bring Luke Ball in again after having played Boyd for 1 week. So you get Ball back for the same price that you got him, and then it's just as if, you know, it was just a 1 week trade.
Yeah, I think that could be a move, definitely. But you might also want to start thinking about getting those premiums in, the real big guys in. Mm. So
now, just to round out the Collingwood talk, Kyle Martin, again, his bye has screwed a lot of plans. I mean, he would have been a player who we would all have loved to have got in, because he's on the bubble this week. And his break even is -108. So ideally, he would have been able to get Mitchell and Martin do a double downgrade this week. But of course, Mitchell on the bubble is on the bye this week, so you'll be able to get him the week after. But Martin is going to have a price increase, like Hutchings did the previous week. Of course, he didn't play this week, but Martin is going to go up, you know, that 70 to 80 grand as Hutchings did, so he's going to be a lot dearer if you wanted to pick him up after the buy period. But so I guess a lot of people are just going to bypass Martin and maybe hope that he doesn't score all that well, or maybe he gets a vest or something this week, so that he doesn't increase all that much. So I feel like a lot of coaches are just going to ignore him because they've got bigger fish to fry with downgrading their round 13 guys. And of course, Martin being a round 13 guy, you just haven't got room for him.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is the problem, whether you're willing to bring him in for the price rise and maybe wear a donut the week after. That's going to be a tricky one. I think most people won't be willing to do that. But, you know, reasons to do that and take the hit and get to the next week that way, if depending on what you're trying to get out of the game, I guess.
Yep. All right. Now, that concludes the round review, because of course there are only six games this week. But to finish off with, Molly, we'll do the top six, I'm not sure we'll do the top six backs in order. Well, one thing I wanted to do beforehand was the top round 11 by trade-in targets this week. So that's something I wanted to do before we do the round 6 backs. But so I've got a list up here of the candidates, I think, in the three positions who I presume people will be trading in this week, assuming people are not going to be trading in the rucks. But as far as the backs go, Molly, and I'm going to be reading out a lot of Fremantle players amongst this list, but the four I've got here are Gary Ibbotson, Pierce Handley, Grant Birchall, and Paul Duffield. Now, if you had to choose one of those guys, who would it be to trade in this week as a back premium?
I actually did have a look at Handley. I like Handley a lot. I would love to be able to get him in. It didn't happen this week, so we'll have to see what happens to try and get him in next week. Some of my trades this week freed up some cash, so I think I've got some round 13 backs. Not a lot, but possibly I've got a lot of midfielders, so maybe there'll be a bit of a switcheroo there to free up a position for him to come into my back line.
So have you already got Birchall?
I already have Birchall, yeah.
So, but if you didn't have him, would you be looking at him and thinking he's so underpriced that he's just so much value?
Absolutely. That's the other point too. He is underpriced as well. And what's his break even? Because I know
132. 132 this week.
So both of those guys, you know, have a hit to take. I'm not sure if one of the other guys hasn't, and that would mean, you know, they might be a bit more likely to be bring them in this week rather than the other guys. So yeah.
So you wouldn't consider either of the Freo guys? I mean, we've been bagging them all year, but you look at Ibbotson and Duffield, and Ibbotson is currently the top. He's averaging just a tick under 100, which is good for second overall.
Yeah,
and Duffield is number 8, so I mean he's with 90.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at, and probably didn't say it very well. That Ibbotson's break even is more in line with his score, so he may be the best one to bring in this week and possibly consider the others for next week when they may even take a further price hit.
Yep, because, I mean, that's the other point to note about the backs is that there are very few round 12 buy backs. So you're probably going to be choosing from two of these guys from this week and next week if you're upgrading both times. So as far as the round 12 backs, you've pretty much got... Enright would be the only real contender there. Looking at where he's ranked at number 7 at the moment with 90.27, and then you'd have to go down to Bo Waters, who's not playing. Have to go way down. Oh, to Mackey, I suppose, who's averaging 82. So yeah, I'm not sure you'd want either of those guys, especially with Enright. Probably getting rested in the second half of the season. Right. So as far as midfielders go, now does that analysis change with Supercoach? I don't feel like it does. Because we do tend to talk a bit too much about Dream Team in the show.
Well,
but
true.
For Supercoach, I don't think that actually changes that much for Supercoach.
No, not a heck of a lot. I wouldn't have thought. I think it's still pretty. These sort of players are pretty even amongst. Although, perhaps Birchall becomes more of an option in Supercoach slightly and Duffield probably less. So, but it's pretty much the same.
Yep. Now, the reason I remembered that is because I believe there is a difference in the midfielders between the Dream Team and Supercoach as far as this discussion goes, because I think I'm going to be leaving Kane Corns out of this one, because even though he's a round 11 buy, and he is currently top of the averages for round 11 buy midfielders, his numbers, if you take them over the past 6 rounds, have been certainly not anywhere near those levels, especially after his 74 in round 9. That really drew his average down. But I think the players I'm looking at here, again, we're going a lot of Fremantle players: Michael Barlow, Nathan Fyfe, Sam Mitchell, Ryan Griffin, and Trent Cotchin. Now, I feel like for Dream Team, it's the first 3 of those guys I'll be looking at, but for Supercoach, I believe it's the last 2 who I'll be looking at. So, do you see a difference there? I mean, Barlow, for me, I don't like him necessarily as a Supercoach player, but I reckon he's more of a Dream Teamer. Fyfe is probably a bit both half and half. Mitchell, he does disappoint me in Supercoach. He should be a Supercoach gun, but isn't. But again, Mitchell is another one of those inside players who I feel like doesn't spread enough, whereas Barlow and Fyfe are probably ahead of him in that one. As far as Supercoach goes, I feel like Griffin is the number 1 for me. You know, not just because of his 170 odd in the game just prior to the bye, but I think he and Cotchin are the 2 I'd want in Supercoach. So, do you have any other thoughts on the premium midfielders?
Yeah, I looked at Mitchell this week. Could be a bit of a homer pick, but I looked at him this week. Probably between him and Boyd as coming into my side. I did notice that the Dream Team side is suggesting that Boyd might have a bit of an injury, so. That might influence my decision in the end. But, I think he's probably good value. The run home is probably no tougher than the way here, and he's been playing off that back flank a lot this season, and maybe into the final he'll go back to playing a little bit more midfield. But the team's been doing well with him coming off that back flank and sort of filling in for Suckling and the likes.
So I didn't mention a bunch of players who I could have. Redden, Mundy, who else? Brad Ebert, Deledio, who I'd imagine a lot of coaches would really like, having enjoyed him in previous years. Have I left out any names there who really should be there?
Who was that? Sorry.
So Deledio, the last one of those. So Redden, yeah. Redden, Mundy, and Deledio were the others who I sort of didn't. I sort of left out, but or Ebert.
See, Redden had a slow start, and I always have liked his game. Yeah. I'm not sure whether he can turn it around this season. If the Lions can start to turn their season around, he may be able to take advantage of that. I mean, Deledio's really turned himself into a good performer week in, week out, which, you know, I think a few of us didn't feel he was in the past. So I think either of those two could definitely fit in there.
Mm. I think, I mean, with that one, it's probably more of a matter of taste. I mean, Barlow, I think as for me, if you've got the money, Barlow and Griffin in either competition are the absolute role goal. But, I mean, I feel like a lot of coaches actually won't have the money, and they'll be looking a bit further down that list. So that's going to be an interesting one. Right, as far as the forwards go, Dustin Martin is right up there, but Jordan Lewis is a name who I don't think is in a whole lot of Dream Teams. He's in, 13,900 Dream Teams, which is actually not an insignificant amount. Justin Westhoff actually has had a bit of a resurgence. The Hoff is back, Molly. I know it's a bit of a sacrilege to say that because he just burned so many coaches so terribly this year, but he's actually been not all that bad in the last 3 weeks, culminating with that 110 in the previous week against the Dogs. Ruff Ed would be one who'd be right up there, who we talked about last week, and obviously Buddy. I mean, if you haven't got Buddy, then he looks like an obvious one. But then again, we would have said that last year. I believe I said this several times about Travis Cloke last year, and I thought, oh, he's underpriced. We need to get him back in. Surely he'll bounce back. And no, he didn't bounce back. So I suppose we need to talk about Buddy and whether he's actually going to be bouncing back. And the other one there who I just threw in was Zorko, who has been up and down, and mostly down in the first half of the season. But again, we know he's capable of big scores. So which of those guys? I feel like it's a bit of an eclectic bunch. I mean, if you haven't got Buddy, I'm not actually sure I can trust any of those guys.
No. And I mean, we normally say that about the back line. And in some ways, and again, I accused of a homer pick. Lewis is probably the most consistent of the guys, as funny as it might seem. He normally doesn't have huge games, but he doesn't have complete and utter shockers that often either. I think Martin has been very good this year at keeping that shocker game out, with only the Collingwood game where he had a 58, and he's put in some big games. So I guess that's good looking at him as someone to play, but it's also bad because his price is up because of those big games. So, you know, I think there's an argument that, you know, the least sexy of the players and in some ways is Lewis, but he may be the most consistent of them.
There's a couple of left field picks who have shown themselves in the last week or three. I was just in FF Genie. You go to ffgenie.com. That's the tool that a lot of fantasy coaches use to wrangle the spreadsheet of all of the scores of fantasy players. And I was ordering the list of round 11 buyer players by the three-round mean, which is the average of the last three games that they've played. And Matt DeBoer is actually second on that list. He has scored 111, 110, 85 in his last three. But previous to that, he was averaging sort of 70s and 60s. So If you want to load up on Fremantle players, he might be worth a look. I mean, he might come out of the, jump out of the box like Ibbotson did in that Fremantle side. As I said, you know, if you want to run the, you want to work the draw, then he might be a sneaky one. But one I did want to ask you about, Molly, is actually Patrick Karnezis. Now, yeah, I know. I'm sorry to ask you about him again, but he is actually. Now, he's probably, this might not be the week to get him in, but just due to the bye situation, this might be the week that you might have to get him in. But he is actually, sorry to say, a bit of an option this week, because if he's going to be scoring 70s, then he is fairly well underpriced at 230-odd, and what is it, 236 in Dream Team, and he's 74 in the game before the bye. His break-even is about that, but it's going to be going down again once that 9 from round 2 rotates out of his score after this week. But, I mean, if he keeps on scoring those 74s, you might only need him for a couple of weeks. And the Lions have got, in terms of the opponents they have, I just need to bring that up, the two opponents they have. They have Fremantle this week at Subiaco, and the Cats at the Gabba. So that's actually a pretty tough draw. But, I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of junk time in these games, Molly. So that actually might work in Karnezis' favour, because junk time is Karnezis' time. It is the time of Karnezis. That is when he rises again and brings us all to salvation, as far as I'm concerned. So,
amen.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is...
Hallelujah.
That's right. So I know he's a terrible player. I know he's not very good. But just for 2 weeks until the bye period is over, he actually might be a sneaky pick.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of logic to that. It's still risky. You're probably back to almost where we were at the start of the season when we thought he was going to come right off. I'm not sure that you might be pulling your hair out, or he may be able to turn it around. I mean, I guess if you look at it, he had the two games and two of the three games, his scores have been about where they need to be. It's just that one game against Adelaide where I think he was the sub that really has hurt his scores.
Yeah, so. I mean, we know he's capable. It's just a matter of whether Voss is actually going to give him a full game for those two
I guess
games.
The problem is he's got three top four sides coming out of the bye. He's got Fremantle, Geelong and Hawthorn, who, you know, they could dominate the Lions.
Mm.
So,
as I said, junk time. I mean, it's a matter of... And it's also a matter of whether the other... midfielders who he's keeping out of the side. I mean, if someone like Maloney doesn't play this week, Karnezis has to get a gig because they're running out of midfielders. It's something which you need to look at the Brisbane injury report to see what the jobs. It's just short term job security of Karnezis is going to be. And even then, because Voss doesn't seem to like him, he might give him the best anyway. So we'll just have to see about that. I mean, it's going to be a big... I mean, I was bagged this week for the Aaron Davey call I made 2 or 3 weeks ago. That has actually been not too bad prior to this week. But again, I feel like players like this, you only want them in your side for a short amount of time. And certainly with Karnezis, I can see him being in your side for 2 weeks. And then, you know, you take the cash and you run and you try to upgrade to someone else. But hopefully there will actually be a forward rookie worth getting once that happens. But, all right, just to round out the show, we've already gone well over an hour, but just very quickly, Molly, we'll go to the top six backs, I presume, most. Well, I'll read out the top six backs in terms of scoring as it is now. We have Goddard at number one. He's the only one who's scored over 100 in Dream Team as an average. Ibbotson, Heppel, Gibbs, and this is obviously the problem with the top six backs, Molly, is this: it's so overloaded with round 13 players. So so there are actually three Essendon players in the top six, and another obviously Gibbs at four is another round 13 player. So of the top six backs, as in terms of average at the moment, four of them have round 13 buys, which is obviously an issue. So it was Goddard, Ibbotson, Heppel, Gibbs, Hanley, Hibbard. Now, there is a case, I suppose, to make, Molly, that that actually should be the top six. I mean, who do you think's the most likely of those six to drop out?
Well, I mean, I guess Git Ibbotson,
in
a way, is probably the one that I'm thinking of. But, you know, there's not a lot of sign that he will. I mean, I noticed that the guys who are just out are just out by, you know, less than a point a game. Yep. So, you know, you could extend that top six to the top eight and still be within, you know, 3 points at the bottom, you know. So
it is noticeable.
2 points,
I mean, yeah,
at the bottom.
We talk in fantasy football, they talk especially in draft leagues about tiers. And you can certainly say, based on the scoring at the moment, Goddard is pretty much on his own tier on 102.6.
Oh, Ibbotson's only 3 points behind.
Yeah, so Ibbotson and Heppel are only 3 points behind. So they're basically all averaging around about 100. And yep, then there's no one from there back to 95. So it's another 5 points before you go back to Gibbs. Now, Gibbs, you could possibly give a pass, of course, due to that injury game. That's probably the one that's pulled his average down. So from week to week, he's probably going to be scoring a whole lot more than that. But I do notice that Gibbs has only had 2 tons for the year. So that's a bit of an issue. But
he seemed to have a slow start, so he's coming on, I think, a little bit. So. Mm.
I think we all expect Ibbotson and Duffield is at number 8. We expect Lyon to eventually screw those guys over because that's what Ross Lyon does.
More to the point.
Yes. Corey Enright at number 7. We keep on expecting him to fall away, but he doesn't, Molly. So, I mean, is he the one who jumps in once one of the top 6 falls away?
Who was that, sorry?
Corey Enright.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's all class. But, I mean, I guess the issue with someone like Enright is if Geelong stay towards the top of the ladder, although his average might keep him up there, will he be rested extra games in the run home like Geelong often do to their older players? So although he may end up in the top 6 or 7 or 8 averages, will he end up being in the top 6 or 7 scores overall?
Mm. Trent McKenzie at number 9. That's the big surprise for me for this year. He's actually in my Wags team, and she doesn't let me forget it. The Cannon is in there and just smashing my team.
Oh, is
all
that
about
how he got
puck
in? I wondered how he all got in after your puck post the yes, other day about yes, one of her reasons for
so,
picking players.
Look, I feel like Trent McKenzie, from a fantasy point of view, is the new Shannon Hearn. But the problem is he doesn't get tagged every week. So he's the player who plays the role in Gold Coast as Hearn does in the West Coast Eagles setup. He's the designated kicker, and they get it to him at every opportunity, but they don't seem to be tagging him, unlike Hearn, who gets a tag every week. So I'm wondering whether that's actually going to be something that happens in the second half of the year, Molly, as Gold Coast become more fearsome and actually start challenging the better sides. Is a tagger going to go to McKenzie every week because he's so damaging by foot?
Well, I think after the weekend and in the press how it's been highlighted that, you know, him being allowed to run around on his own was just foolishness, whether he'll be picked up in much the same way a Grant Birchall or you know, a Heath Shaw has been in the past.
Yep,
so, yeah, I think he'll be tagged a lot more than what he is now.
Yes. Well, from my own point of view, I hope he is because, geez, I'm getting sick of getting beaten by my Wags team. But anyway, Birchall at number 10. Now, of course, you would expect Birchall to vie for All Australian honours this year, but an underreported part of his fantasy year, Molly, he hasn't actually scored more than 81 since the first month of the season. So, I mean, the Hawthorn draw does open up a bit towards the third quarter of the season, but he hasn't actually been all that great since the first month. So, I mean, he's still averaging 89, but he's not averaging anywhere. He hasn't actually scored 89 for 5 games straight. So I can't see him getting back in that top 6.
Yeah. I think from a fantasy point of view, that is true. I wouldn't say he hasn't been that great from a pure footy sense, but he's definitely been picked up a lot more now and a lot more of his ball is intercept play and the likes. So
number 11 is Nick Floston, of course. Now, it's only based on 6 games, but he's averaged 88 from those games. And, of course, the game he played prior to the bye was the one he scored 3 goals in. which only resulted in 90 Dream Teams, surprisingly. But I guess the feeling with Vlosten, Molly, is you just ride that out as far as it goes, and yep. you don't need a sixth premium because you can just play Vlosten there, and that should be fine.
Heath Until Short he falls off the wagon. So,
Heath yeah. Short, number 12. Now this is a bit of a surprise to me that he's thereabouts. He's actually scored 4 tons for the year, but 3 of the other scores have been less than 70. So his standard deviation is fairly pronounced. But Collingwood's draw gets very easy in the next little bit, and Shaw is a bit of a flat track bully as far as Dream Team goes, and Supercoach. I mean, of the players outside the top six, I think he's actually the biggest threat to players like Hibbard, who might drop away, or if any of those Essendon players fall foul of the judiciary. Of whatever acronym that the judiciary finds them guilty of, but Shaw might actually be the one who jumps out of the box, and he's still priced at 417, which is a lot less. Well, actually, it's not actually all that much less now to look at it than all the rest of them. But as I said, he is the one, especially in the short term, who's most likely to be top six scorer, especially over the next 6 weeks or so. So if you haven't got him in, I feel like he's a trade-in target after his bye this week.
Yeah, now that's not a bad call at all. He is someone who likes to feast.
Yep.
Which did get him in trouble at one point this year. But he does, if he's not picked up and not handled right, he can be someone who does score quite well. So, yeah, he is someone to watch.
All right. Now, I'll only read out 2 more names. Sean Burgoyne, who I have
well,
on my side.
Well, I mean, hey, we know he's done for the year because until we hear the word, you drop him. So I hear that, he's not. I actually did look at him for about a second and then remembered and disregarded him.
Okay. Well, the final name is Nick Malcheski. Now, he is a surprising name because, of course, he was almost done in his career at the end of last year. But for whatever reason, as I keep on seeming to whinge every week, they don't seem to put enough effort into Malcheski and McVay. And Malcheski keeps on getting away for... He's had, 4 tons and another 2 90s. He's had 2 poor scores, a 49 in round 7 and a 56 in round 2. But other than that, he's played every game and he has averaged 86. And given he was priced at about 370 at the start of the year, that is a pretty good effort. He has earned some cash for you, but... given that he is fairly old, Molly, and the old blokes do tend to get calf injuries. I know Heath Scotland has certainly suffered from that this year. Do you think Malcheski gets anywhere near? I mean, I suppose if you're looking for an upgrade to a round 12 bye player the week after, I mean, Malcheski would be the only real candidate if you're not looking, if you don't trust Enright to play all the games, I suppose. So. Is Malcheski any much better than Enright as far as a his youth or his susceptibility to injury? I feel like he's pretty much the same player, isn't he?
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah, they've both got that issue to deal with. So you're right.
All right. Well, we shall go into the top 8 midfielders next week, and of course the top 6 forwards, and also I suppose we'll do the ruck the week after, but that is about enough Coach's Box for this week, clocking in at 1:20 yet again, so we shall see you guys next week, and good luck for the buys.
Okay, see you guys.